Mr. Charlie Chia Food in Real 4. Mr. Chia, you mentioned that a Taiwanese soldier came to the flats and asked all the Chinese males to go down to assemble. Do you remember what did he tell all of you?
It was not a Japanese soldier. He looked more like either a local chap, you see, who went around the whole estate and exhorted all the male Chinese people to come down and line up for identification. See, because not knowing what it was all about, and the people were, and myself, were in fear that if the response was not there, they would use their soldiers to come up and physically check each individual fact, and that would make matters worse for those of us caught remaining behind in the flats. So that bluff worked, and I would say almost all those male Chinese people did come out of the flats and lined up.
Did the person tell you what was the whole thing all about?
No. The person did not say what it was all about. All that he shouted out was that all male Chinese were to come out and line up for identification, get that passes, so-called passes or thingies.
Regardless of age?
Only adults, not children, see? All females.
All males?
Only males, adult males. And the people just form up. They saw a queue. They just form up behind the queue.
Where was the exact location of this place where you had to line up for your passes?
The exact location where we collected the so-called passes or tanki, as it was known as at that time, was on main Tiong Bahru Road itself, outside a provision shop. I think it is now the second, at the end of the second row of houses, shop houses, as you come into Tiong Bahru Road from Outram Road. There were a couple of Japanese officers there, and of course all along the route you had these Japanese soldiers. And when you reached there, if you were cleared, you collected your pass or tanki as it was known. Otherwise, you were asked to step out of the line and wait.
So as you come down from your flats, there were soldiers all lined up along the side of the roads.
They were lined up at intervals, you see, suitable intervals along the routes where the people had to go, you see.
Were there any barbed wires fencing the boundary of that area?
No, no barbed wires, you see. After you collected your pass, then you proceeded on, further on, after the next road junction, there was an open field on which there are now housing boat flats, and there we waited until we were told to go back.
So your flats was very near the provision shop where the queue was?
Flat which I was staying at the time was at Guan Chuan Street in the what is known as the clock tower, see, which is a distance, we'll say, approximately about 300 yards from the pass issuing center.
How did what was your impressions of these Japanese soldiers who were lining up along the sides of the road?
The impression, I did not really took any notice of them, see? But I did see them because of their uniforms, you see. We were on one side of the road, and they were on the opposite side of the road, you see.
Could you remember the uniforms that they were wearing?
Jungle greens, you see, jungle greens.
When you went down to join the crowd, how was the atmosphere in the area?
The crowd were they were very orderly. There was only talks and by whispers. Nothing unruly at all. Maybe due to the overnight shock of this change, you see.
Was there any tension in the air that you could feel it?
Yes, you can say, but it was not felt at that time, you see. It was just something totally new. Never heard of in everybody's life, you see.
As you mingle with the crowd, did you hear any rumors of or any news?
No, just only normal talk amongst friends, that's all, you see, in whispers.
When you mentioned that there were a few Japanese officers stationed outside the provision shop. What were they doing?
They had a couple of tables there, you see. They were just observing. Yeah, now I come to think of it, I think I was told, although I did not see him, I was told that Captain Yap Peng Gek was then in the Singapore Volunteer Force, SVC as it was known at the time. He was there.
At the Tiong Bahru?
No, he was there. I do not know for what purpose, you see. But being a captain in the SVC, It could be assumed for only one purpose of identification of his voice. But of course, there was no need for that identification, because all the volunteers had a soldier crop. You couldn't run away from that.
You did not personally see him at all?
I did not. But I was told later on that he was there.
So when you... did you notice whether these Japanese officers were asking questions, or did they just see and let you pass?
No questions were asked. You just pass by, and if you were in the clear, you collected your pass. Otherwise, they just pulled you out. Not physically, pointed a finger and asked you to go.
So
the
there was no
officers, Japanese officers, were not doing anything.
Do you remember what was written on the pass?
Oh, I do not know Chinese. You see, I don't know. I presume it was some rubbish. Just a chop, that's all. To enable one, it seems, to move around.
From your observation there, did you notice who were the sort of people that were sort of asked to move aside? They were not clear.
Well, I saw several of them, one of which was my brother, and then my two mates who were in front of me. Of course, they had the soldier's crop, so automatically they joined the crowd there.
Your brother was also...
My brother was in the MAS then, Medical Auxiliary Service, you see. But whether he had the soldier's crop or not, I do not recollect, because I had not seen him for some time.
Did he come back from that? After
no, none of those three or any one of those who were asked to stand aside were ever heard of ever since that day. And up to the present moment, it still remains a mystery as to what happened to them.
After you were given your pass, you went to the field. What was the purpose of assembling at the field?
Until they had finished.
How long did the whole operation take?
Well, it took maybe an hour or more, you see.
For all the residents in that area?
An hour or more. From the time we came up to our house until we were allowed to go home.
Do you remember which day was that?
Let me see. I arrived back on the second day after the surrender. That means on the 17th of February. And it must have been on the 19th, I think.
In the morning?
In the morning. We started in the morning.
During this time, were the Japanese soldiers or even the officer rude to any of the residents there? Or not to any one of them?
Until then, there was no contact other than the various sentry posts. scattered all over the island.
How did you feel about this, the whole thing, the identification parade, as you call it?
My personal view of the whole affair is to pick out the likely suspect troublemakers, you see, and at the same time to show to the people who are now the new masters.
At that time, did you feel the same way too?
It did not occur to me to think or otherwise about the whole affair, because of the very suddenness of the fall of Singapore after the propaganda which has been given out by the then British government. This was, the fall of Singapore was something which was totally unthinkable until it happened. And when it happened, the people were more or less in a state of shock, as you would say, you see? So any other things, they could not think about. That's all. In this context of this identification purpose, for the purpose of collecting a pass, for movement to around Singapore, I would like to mention that out of the various identification parades which were held all over the island, as far as I know, there was only one existing survivor who managed to escape and was still alive in the late 50s, a Chinese school teacher who was at the Telok Kurau identification parade. I was there then working with the War Department in the War Graves section. That is how I came to contact this Chinese school teacher who led me to the site behind what was then known as the Haunted Hill and is now the Lucky Heights housing estate, where I saw all these bleached bones of those people who had been machine gunned in the vegetable plots. They were not covered. They were more or less in the vegetable plots, which the bones could be clearly seen. You had water, and there it was.
All this was after the occupation?
After the surrender of the Japanese. So I would like to pause and bring forth a few things or matters. Firstly, one, such as the soul talked about, fifth column in Singapore and Malaysia. I personally feel that this was a myth, and there was no such thing as a fifth column. Perhaps some one or two people or so might have flashed a torchlight, either intentionally or out of mischievousness. And therein you had this so-called fifth column. For a very simple reason, that long before the outbreak of war, there were a number of Japanese civilians in Singapore. One very famous or infamous place was then the so-called Tencent store at Middle Road. I suspect that was the beehive of all suspected Japanese espionage agents. They could roam around all over Singapore. Must have taken photographs, because from the way they directed the attack, they knew where to go. There was no doubt or hesitation about the direction in which they were to go. So they must have had all the various maps, photographs, the locations, all pinpointed. If a true manual could be drawn up of the actual route and the attack, you'll see from it that there was no loss of direction on the Japanese soldiers' part. They knew where to go. The second point is...
Mr. Chair, before you go to the second point, when you mentioned the fifth column, what do you mean by that?
Fifth column, as what is known in those days, whether it's out in the East or even in European theater of war, is the enemy's agents planted in the country itself.
So you're referring to the Japanese themselves?
No, could be some local people working for or in the pay of the Japanese, you see.
So the period you're referring to is the pre-war period?
Yes.
At that time, what was the local population's attitudes towards the Japanese community as a whole?
Come to think of it and to analyze the position, the attitude of the people throughout or something like it. The British they'll be back next week. You see? So it kept on like that. On and on it went on indefinitely. See, when good friends meet, the main topic was about, I heard on the radio or something of the sort, yeah, the British will be coming. Yeah, something to that effect. So the people were more or less living on hopes. You know? They were convinced and confident that the British would come back. But as to the date, they were simply guessing, you see, from a week to another week. And therein, they lived on hopes. And perhaps they were buoyed up by this feeling that, we just tolerate and suffer for this short period, and soon it will be over. That's my feeling of how the people felt. Of course, there were the unfortunate ones. When I say unfortunate ones, were those people who were taken away at the Tinky and they were never seen or heard of again. And with some of the unlucky ones who were rounded up in the various parts of the island and taken away. One possible motive for all these activities would be to install fear into the population. Because they could not afford to leave behind their combat troops, and neither could they afford to leave behind a large occupation force of army personnel for obvious reasons. So therefore, they had to resort to these measures, including all the beheadings. Because in the Singapore Harbour Boat go-downs at that time, there were plenty of goods. The go-downs were well stocked, and there was quite a lot of looting. But to set an example, the Japanese, instead of shooting the looters, thought it would be more expedient to catch them and behead a few of them and display their heads in public as a firm warning. That would be a better deterrent than shooting the looters. And I think they did succeed in their purpose, because looting then stopped. And it was pretty peaceful on the island. So you could walk about. Except for the Japanese